Soundstripe.
Welcome to Mommy Brain Revisited, the neuroscience of parenting. I'm your host, Dr. Jody Paluski.
Today, it's really a pleasure to have Dr. Susanna Carmona speaking with us. And Susanna, maybe you can introduce where you work, since my French is okay, but my Spanish is not very good at all.
Okay, no problem. So I work at Hospital General Gregorio Marañón. It's a hospital in Madrid. And there I lead a group in neuroimaging. And we study, of course, the human maternal brain.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So this is super exciting to have you here. I know that we met at the parental brain meeting a couple years ago in Toronto, and it's nice to connect with you and see so much great work coming out of your lab. So you've really been doing this research in humans the past couple of years that has shown how remarkably the brain can change during pregnancy and the postpartum period. I mean, apart from loving this and loving that it extends what we're seeing in animal models, and really it points to the importance of maternal brain changes. I want to talk about this study where you compared moms and adolescent girls and non-pregnant women. So can you tell me a bit about the foundation for this study?
Well, in 2017, we published a study showing that pregnancy renders long-lasting changes in the human brain. So there we show gray matter volume reductions in areas involving social cognition. And the thing is that when the paper arrived to the media, some journalists and some people directly associated these gray matter volume reductions to, I don't know how to say that, like to atrophy or neurodegeneration or poor cognitive performance, right? And at this point, what we did, or what we answered the journalists, is that, I mean, gray matter volume reductions do not necessarily imply neurodegeneration. They can also be associated to neurodevelopmental processes, as those are taking place during adolescence. So what we wanted to do in this paper is to test if that was the case. We wanted to see if the brain changes associated to pregnancy are indeed morphologically similar to those observed during adolescence. So that's the main foundation, to demonstrate that, or to at least test that a reduction in gray matter does not necessarily has to be associated with a neurodegenerative process or a poor cognitive performance, which in fact we didn't find a worse score in cognitive performance on the mothers before and after the pregnancy.
So what I find really interesting, and this is something that's come up in some of my research in animal models where I've showed a decrease in the production of new neurons with motherhood in the hippocampus, is people always like, oh, so it's, you know, the structure is smaller or there's fewer, so that's bad. And I think we forget that that's not necessarily bad. Smaller doesn't mean worse. And bigger isn't necessarily better. It all comes down to function. And I love, so tell me about this paper then, because you really wanted to say, hey, this, the brain changes, it's a healthy change, and let's compare it to another significant change, like during adolescence. I think this is a great way to get at this question about whether or not this change is good or bad.
Yeah, well, actually, we still don't know if it's good or bad, but at least we make the point that it does not necessarily has to be bad. The neuroanatomical changes are nearly identical to those observed during adolescence.
So let's backtrack a little bit, and can you describe a little bit about how you did the study?
Yeah, so what we did was we had the MRI scans, structural MRI scans of a group of women before and after their first pregnancy. They all of them were premiparous, so it was their first pregnancy. Then we have a group of control women who were women that were scanned at similar time intervals, but they were nulliparous. They didn't have any child and they didn't get pregnant between the sessions. And we also had a group of adolescents that were in their late adolescence, and we have like pre-post scans. What we did was to compare how their brain changes in a set of morphometrical measures. We focus on the cortex and we perform a series of vertex-wise analysis, and we extract a series of metrics that together can give us a whole picture of how is the anatomy, how did the anatomy change across the session. So we have measures about cortical thickness, surface area, cortical volume, and many other features like gyrification. And this is important because we know that, for instance, during adolescence, what we found on the previous paper was changes in volume. But of course, changes in volume can imply changes in thickness, changes in surface area, changes in both of them. So we wanted to disentangle these different metrics because we know that in adolescence, it's a decrease in cortical thickness, and this decrease in cortical thickness goes together with a decrease in surface area. So we wanted to test if the pattern was the same on pregnant women. And we actually saw that was the case. So both pregnant and adolescents show a decrease in volume that is translated into a decrease in cortical thickness and surface area, as well as in a series of changes in the gyrification of the cortex that leads to a flattening of the cortex. So,
and just for those at home, the cortex is really that outer part of the brain we're talking about. And when you're talking about gyrification, we're talking about how it folds. So if anybody's seen a picture of a brain, you can see how it's kind of all folded up and together. So essentially you did these scans, so these using this imaging technique to compare the cortex changes from pregnancy to postpartum, is that correct? And before adolescence to after adolescence?
Yeah, so it's before pregnancy to postpartum. So that's important because most of the studies usually focus on the postpartum period. We here have the pre-session was of women who have never been pregnant, and so we have the pre-pregnancy baselines.
So what I love about this is that you really show that the changes across pregnancy in the cortex and the measurements you did at the cortex are really similar to the changes across adolescence.
Yeah, so that's what we found. We found that both pregnancy and adolescence entail nearly identical morphometric adaptation. So they both are characterized by a decrease in cortical volume. And this decrease is the result of decreases both in thickness and area. And also this flattening of the cortex that I was telling about. So when we compare the changes between pregnancy and adolescence, we found no difference between those two groups at all.
And then they were different than the adult female who had never been pregnant.
They both differ from the non-pregnant women.
Yeah. And what I love about this is that really, you know, we always talk about adolescence as being so significant in a person's life, in both males and females. And of course, their brain changes. I don't think anybody would argue against that because everything else is changing. And yet we don't really talk about that with pregnancy. And I love that you have so clearly shown, and I'm going to put a picture up of your figure from this paper when I post this, but so clearly shown how also during pregnancy, yes, it's during adulthood, but it's also a significant change in a woman's life, and it significantly changes the brain.
Yeah, so I think that was the part that I enjoyed the most. So realizing of the many parallelisms between adolescence and pregnancy. So both are transitional life periods that entail a series of behavioral changes to face the challenge ahead. And also a change in self-perception. I mean, everybody that has become a mother know that there is a huge change in the way you perceive yourself. They're also characterized by abrupt increases in sex hormones. Both of them are periods of high risk for the onset of many psychiatric disorders. And now with this, we also show that both entail similar neuroanatomical adaptation. So yeah, we're kind of making this this link between pregnancy in adolescence and highlighting the necessity of studying the human maternal brain.
Yeah, which I love. So now I'm going to ask really, okay, we know that the brain changes. You've seen these cortical changes. And what do you think these brain structural changes really mean in terms of function?
Yeah, good question. So, well, based on the results of the study, we're talking about, we cannot say nothing about the function at all. However, based on other studies we have published, like the one we published in 2017 on NatNeuro and a recent one we have published in psychoneuroendocrinology together with Elsaline Huxema. So what we found is that the more the decrease, the higher the response, the functional response. So in the psychoneuroendocrinology study, we measured the ventral striatum, which, as you know, it's a key region on the rodent maternal circuit. And we found that the more the reduction in this area, the higher the response of this area to our pictures of their baby. So what we see, it's an interesting inverse relation. So the less the volume, the more the activation. And that has been observed many times in the studies of on adolescents. So the more the regions in charge of executive functions are reduced or have less cortical thickness, the higher the response while children perform executive functions. So we don't know exactly which are the biological mechanisms behind that, but probably it's some kind of more efficient transmission after synaptic pruning. But of course, we need more studies to be sure about it.
Yeah, and I guess I didn't ask this, I should have asked this before, but what percentage of change are we actually talking about, just to give everybody an idea?
So, of course, since the time between the pre and the post-adolescence was a little bit longer, we make an estimation of a monthly rate percentage change. So we're talking about an estimation of the monthly rate percentage change. And, for instance, in cortical volume, both, or in total brain volume, both adolescents and mothers show a change of 0.1% per month.
It's a slight but very significant reduction.
Yeah. One of the things that I like the most about this and the other studies, as you mentioned, it's very significant, but by very significant, what we see is that it's very consistent. So you see that a reduction in nearly all the women. It's like something I'm not used to see when I'm working on neuroimaging. I'm not used to see that I can classify 100% of my subjects. I've been working, for instance, with, with a database of very sick, mentally sick patients, such as schizophrenic patients, and I've never seen a classification index like that. So that means that more or less every woman kind of shows this change. And that's very important for a neuroimaging study, to see this consistency, this power of classifying.
Yeah, that's amazing, really. Because it's rare we see everyone responding the same way in most studies. So to have this where you can tell if it's a mom or not by the measurement pretty consistently is quite incredible and speaks to the universal change, right, in the brain at this time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very clinically useful because they already know if they have become a mother or not. but it's very a very powerful evidence that these changes are really significant, as you said. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it might not be clinically useful, but I think that lots of women have welcomed the knowledge that their brain is changing. So they're, in fact, they didn't know this before. Of course, we see the bodies change during pregnancy and the postpartum period, and we talk about hormones changing, but we don't really talk about how our brain can be changing during this time. So evidence like you have is really kind of gives some women, I think, relief, like, oh, maybe I'm thinking or things are going a bit different for me, or I'm feeling a little bit off emotionally, or my memory's not so great because my brain is changing. And that can be kind of a reassuring factor.
Yeah. It's something that most of left everybody knew, that the brain of a mother changes, but nobody has shown that. So it's like a very obvious phenomenon, but we just like put the neuroimaging evidence that was happening. But yeah, I think most of the women already knew that something was going on in their brain while they got pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah, but having the evidence there is really, really, I think, reassuring for lots of individuals, lots of moms. So I think that's really great. Really, really great. And you mentioned earlier a little bit that you did look at cognition.
Yeah, we did. So yes, on the paper we published in Nature Neuroscience, since there's like there's not a clear evidence when reading the literature whether there is a cognitive decline or a cognitive improvement. As you know, like there are differences between animal studies and human studies. We wanted to test what happened in our sample. So we actually measure a set of cognitive measures. So we have like working memory, executive function, learning abilities, and some other measures that, and we test before and after their pregnancy, and we did not find any difference. The truth is that we have a small sample. We don't know what will happen with a larger sample, but in our data with 25 subjects before and after their pregnancy, we did not find cognitive differences in cognitive test. We are exploring that in better. Sorry, tell me.
Yeah, and I think that this is something that often it's hard to detect these cognitive changes or changes in memory in the lab sometimes.
Exactly, yeah.
I love this idea that you talk in the paper and you mentioned here, but this idea that when you become a mom, your brain is essentially fine-tuning. So even though there's these structural changes, it might be that there's an increased function in terms of caring for your child or learning new things that's important. Am I understanding that correctly?
Again, we cannot be 100% sure about if brain changes associated to pregnancy reflect a fine-tuning or a specialization. But we can have some indications that that is the case, because, I mean, it was also to reinforce that the idea that they do not necessarily mean a neurodegeneration. So, so for instance, both pregnancy and adolescence are associated with this set of cognitive and behavioral changes that they improve the ability to deal with challenges ahead, to take care not only of yourself but also of another person. Whereas, if you see a person that has some kind of neurodegenerative disorder, they worsen their ability to be autonomous or to face future challenges. So that's one of the points. And also another point is that, so whereas neurodegenerative disorders tend to be characterized by large decreases in cortical thickness with minimal affectations of surface area measures, here on the paper what we saw is that pregnancy in adolescents entail changes not only in cortical thickness but also in surface area. So we have certain evidence that they both might point to a fine-tuning, especially also the results from our previous study in which we found that the more the brain changes, the higher the scores on tests that measure maternal attachment. That's also an indication that they might be adaptive for motherhood. But of course, yeah, as always, we need more studies. So, sorry.
Yeah, we definitely need more studies. And I also think when you talk about this idea of neurodegeneration, we also see in animal models, as well as post-mortem studies, where they take the look at the brain after someone's passed away, that there's often a difference, a loss of cells and neurons, a loss of function. So on a molecular level, there's a lot of losses. Whereas I think from the animal research we're seeing, and we don't have any data on moms that I know of in human moms, but there seems to be a reshuffling, a change in the number of new cells, a change in the synapses and connections. And so it's not necessarily a loss. It seems to be a higher functioning, if anything. So it's something to keep in mind that even though the structure changes in the brain, and might get less, there's also lots of other mechanisms more in detail that are making your brain function.
Yeah, and for me, like, even if you don't look at the brain, one of the things that I always try to make clear is that when you're a mother, you have to be able to take care of yourself and of other people, and mm-hmm. and you don't see that with neurodegenerative disorder. So it's like yeah. you have a worse ability to autonomously face future challenges. So that's also an indication that you do not have a worse performance. Actually, I mean, I'm not talking now about specific tests on memory or whatever, but actually you have like the ability to face challenges and to take care of yourself and of other people. So.
Oh yeah, I like this idea where you just, I mean, if we practically look at people at different stages in their life, socially, of course, someone who's suffering with neurodegenerative disorder can't take care of themselves, but a mom can take care of her child, usually in family. I mean, of course, there's the increased mental illness with motherhood often, but in general, moms function at a high capacity.
That's my vision of it. Even if you take out of the equation, the brain changes. So that's already an evidence that it does not imply some kind of degeneration or neurodegeneration or cognitive.
Now I'm going to ask, you looked at first-time moms, but what about second-time moms?
That's a super cool question. We don't know. I know that my colleague, Elseline Hoeksema, who is in Leiden Institute now, she's studying second moms. It's not possible to think that we're going to have, like, the more the child you have, the less the gray matter volume, because, I mean, it's strange. I mean, our idea is there's, like, some kind of priming with the first, but we don't know. She's now doing research on that topic, and I hope we will see the results soon.
Okay, very cool. For my PhD, I actually looked at first and second time moms in rodent models and how they performed on spatial memory and hippocampal neurogenesis. So I'm always curious, but it seems like the first time, at least in the rodent moms, had the most significant effect, but then there was a bit of an enduring effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I have another question I want to ask. What about dads and dads versus adolescent boys?
Yeah, that's another question we're studying right now. So the truth is that when you see like the data, the raw data, you see that dads are kind of in between. So they are not significantly different from zero. They are not significantly different from non-parent males. But they also do not differ from mothers. So I think that the thing with dads is that there is a higher variability. So there may be dads that are more involved into taking care of their children, whereas others might not be as involved. And as you know from animal literature, like hormones are important to start quickly the maternal behavior, but also the interaction with the kids can change the brain. So we're now studying what's going on the dads, because we think that we didn't find differences, but because the group is very inhomogeneous, so we are studying what's the driving of this variability on that.
Okay, yeah, because there has been at least one study I know out of Ruth Feldman's lab where she looked at primary caregiving fathers, and they had some similar brain changes as the primary caregiving mothers. But it seems to, like you said, it has a lot to do with the caregiving and the interaction and the time spent with the infant, which is pretty cool in itself, right? Because it speaks to the idea that anyone can parent, and it's going to, your brain is going to adapt and change so you can do this really well. So I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. So that's great to hear that you're studying dads.
Yeah.
And then I have another question. I probably have lots of questions, but this is another question. I'm curious about what happens with pregnancy loss in the brain. So if you have a miscarriage or you have a stillbirth, because so many women do go through this, and I don't think we talk about it enough. And I'm wondering what happens, because your brain is now primed to take care of a child, and then the child's not there.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I love to study that topic. It's really difficult to run a study with a similar design we did on this one, and to study childbirth. But we are trying to see what might be going on. By, you know, that there are these big data sets like the UK Biobank, and they have a sample of women that gave birth stillbirth. Yeah, I mean, as you know, psychologically there is a huge impact that you didn't know until you have gone through it, or at least people do not expect to be so affected as they are when that happens. And sometimes it's misunderstood, because many people do not empathize with that feeling of lost. But yeah, I mean, psychologically, there is a huge impact on that. And that leads us to think that there might be also like some neural base for that psychological impact. I would love to study that. As I said, it's very difficult. We can have some approximations like cross-sectional studies or other approaches to see what might be going on. But yeah, I would love to know what happens here. Yeah, it's a super interesting question. Yeah,
I think so. I agree. Well, we got off topic a little bit there, but it's such an important topic.
Like, you know, and it's so easy to talk to you about anything, so I kind of feel very comfortable. So, yeah.
No, but I'm also really curious, right? I think there's so many things about mom's health and women's health that we don't talk enough about, or we haven't had the chance or the funding to study.
Mm-hmm.
What's next for your research in this area?
As you mentioned, there are some things that we would like to study as with the fathers and also second pregnancies. But the funny thing is that the Nat Neuro, the paper we published on Nat Neuro, answer one important question, but what is more important is that it opened a lot of other questions to answer. So we have many questions to be answered by the research community. And now, for instance, we are running a series of studies to determine the temporal pattern of the changes, like when do the changes start, how long do they last, are they temporal, or are they forever, are they gonna disappear when the child is 10 years old, 12, never, right after. So on the first paper we showed that they last at least 2 years, but for the first 2 years, but you know that the first 2 years, like the child is very, very demanding. So we don't know if, for instance, we can still see those changes when the child is like 6 years old, or if those changes kind of reverse. Another question is, which are the mediating factors? Like, are they just hormones? Is there an implication of environmental factors? Like the time you spend with the child, also the lack of sleep, because we all know that the postpartum is characterized by a huge lack of sleep. So we want to kind of disentangle which is the relation or which variables are associated with these anatomical changes. And finally, and I think that most important, is to test if there is an association between the brain changes and the onset of postpartum depression or any other postpartum disorder. Like, can we kind of predict if the mothers, which mothers will develop some kind of postpartum based on a lot of variables, including neural changes, but also, of course, like other important psychological and behavioral and social variables that can determine that. So those are maybe the most important questions we're trying to answer with our current research, but of course there are many more.
Yeah, there's so many questions I think that need to be answered, and this is great. It's great to hear that you're continuing on in this research, and I of course love the idea that you're trying to look at kind of predictive variables that could be helpful in preventing maternal mental illness, because I think this is really, really important as well. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Just thank you for the interview and for helping us to give visibility to our studies.
No, thank you so much for being here, for taking the time to chat with me. Questions, comments, suggestions, get in touch at Mommy Brain Revisited on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can also contact me on my website at jodipaluski.com. That's JODIPAWLUSKI.com. Looking forward to hearing from you.
Stripe.